Transition Radio from San Diego, exploring the world of change with you. Are you ready to take your life to a new level? Join transition coaches and best-selling authors Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster as they explore strategies to navigate changes in health, relationships, money, career, and so much more. Get the information and tools to make your life smoother, easier, and more productive. And now, your hosts, Paula Shaw and Kendi Foster.
And welcome to Transition Radio. So good to have you all with us this evening. Paula Shaw here with Kendi Foster. We have an amazing show for you today called Change Your Mind to Change Your Brain. And joining us in just a little bit will be Dr. David Kruger, who's an executive mentor coach and the CEO of Mentor Path Coaching and Training. He's an interesting guy, and he uses neuroscience in marketing. So we've got a lot to learn today, Ken.
I can hardly wait to learn from Dr. David Kruger. And, you know, this show's going to be amazing, Paula. I know that we're going to be talking to our listeners today about how they can use the brain more effectively to make decisions that are impacting their life, their money, relationships, advertising, how advertising impacts them, and probably just about any other area of their life. In our second edition, we're going to be talking about questions to change your life like we always do. Mm-hmm. But this time we got a twist on it. We're going to be discussing questions surrounding neuroscience and neurowisdom that can really turn on the brain. And then in our third segment, we're going to be talking about the alternative way, an unconventional, I'm having time, a hard time speaking
today. The alternative
today.
Way to speak
That's what we got. That's what it is. And also, we're going to be talking about those success habits later on in this show to improve the brain. But right now, I want to ask you something. You know, the topic is change your mind to change your life. How in the heck do we change our mind? Let's start there.
Changing our mind, changing our brain. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I think two of the most important things are changing our thinking and then changing what we focus on. Because I find in my own life and certainly with my clients that what we focus on has such huge impact on what we are and how our life feels and what we do and how, you know, what kinds of emotions come up for us.
Well, I know that's true. I mean, when I'm focused on what's wrong in my life, what isn't working, when I'm focused on maybe blaming somebody for something that I'm feeling, that's definitely changing things for me.
It impacts everything.
It does.
It really does. And people tend to think that we have no choice over what we think about and what we focus on. And that really isn't true. It's one of the few areas in our life where we do have some control and we do have choice. Sometimes you kind of have to grab yourself by the scruff of the neck and say, whoop, take your mind from this and go over here. But you do have choice about what you focus on. One of the teachers I love always says, find a thought that feels better. You know, it's simple, but true.
I like that because, you know, I think people think that we have thoughts that are constantly rolling around our head, that we have no control over those thoughts, as you were saying. But the truth is, thoughts are just passing through our consciousness. And it's like birds flying over, right? You know, you don't have much choice, you know, if the bird's going to fly over your head or not. It's kind of like a thought. But if a bird lands on your head and starts to nest, then you can make some choices, right? And that's the same thing with thoughts.
Yeah. And again, you know, if those birds are just flying over, you have a choice to just be aware they're flying over or to zoom your thoughts in and your focus in on one of them. Or, you know, on particular things about them. Maybe that they're too close. Maybe you're afraid they're going to bomb you, you know? There are things you could focus on that don't serve you well, that aren't going to help you feel better. And that's what I think we tend to do.
Well, I didn't know we were going to talk about birds today, but since we're talking about birds, let's use it in this
analogy. You got another bird analogy?
You know, I kind of do. I mean, I think that we tell stories about birds, right? Mm-hmm. So we see a bird fly over or a thought of our mind, right? Mm-hmm. And we kind of judge that thought, right? We judge, well, you know, this thought about I don't really like this person or what they say or what they do that passes our mind, and we mm-hmm. hook on to that. And then we go into stories of what happened into the past.
Right.
When somebody that looked like this person or said something mm-hmm. like this person mm-hmm. showed up in our life, and now we've got this story around a thought, and we're associating our actions, our feelings with that story.
It attaches a whole lot more meaning to it, doesn't it?
It you know, does.
As you well know, I work with grieving people quite a lot. I wrote that book, Grief, When Will This Pain Never End? And I find this really to be true with grievers. Like, one of the things I encourage them to do is try as much as possible to stay in the present moment. Because most of the time, in the present moment, grief doesn't exist. You know, we feel sadness when we go back and think about what we had that we don't have anymore, or we feel anxiety and fear when we go into the future and think about what that's going to be like without the person or the thing or the place that we've lost. But most of the time, if we just stay present, like we are when we're meditating, there's not that angst and sadness and that real severe grief.
Well, I've heard it said this way. You know, if you're in the future, you're probably anxious, and if you're in the past, you're probably depressed. So, mm-hmm. But that place well that you're put. Talking about, is the place where we become the observer. Mm. We're just learning how to observe our life. Mm-hmm. Is you know, and we detached from judgment and criticism or critique, or we're detached from looking for something. We're just observing yeah. what's going on. When we can get to that place, you know, that place for me is called the zone. I get to that place a lot when I'm out riding bikes mm-hmm. or I'm running or I'm swimming. And the thoughts are not there. I'm just focused on the task at hand. Mm-hmm. And it's such a sense of peace and joy.
Yes, yes. I remember Eckhart Tolle talked about that in, I believe it was A New Earth, and in The Power of Now, you know, where it's just, even if you're, excuse me, just washing the dishes, if you focus on that task and what the water feels like and what the suds look like, and all, you just come into the moment. It's the same kind of thing we do with mindfulness work. Mm-hmm. Just to be in this moment, mm-hmm. not a month from now, a week from now, even an hour from now can produce angst, mm-hmm. but just being present. And the other thing about it is this is the only moment that's actually real. This is the only moment we're really alive and into our lives. This one.
Well, I must be feeling that moment now because I'm feeling expansive right this
time. Well, of yeah. course. You're in my presence, sir.
Well, of course. Absolutely. And, you know, so there is that analogy. You feel what you focus on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Whatever you're focusing on, you're feeling mm-hmm. in this moment. Mm-hmm. So I love to have clients. I had this one lady and I asked her. She was feeling depressed and down. I said, you know, why don't you do this? Why don't you focus on the feeling of love this week? I think I told you this story a while back at one of our shows last year, but she decided, okay, for 1 week, I'm going to focus on love. I'm going to expand that feeling. I'm going to mm-hmm. think about everything I love in my life. She told me that kids at the grocery store started coming up to her, and she didn't even like kids, right? Hanging on her, looking at her, wanting to connect with her mm. because she was emanating
yeah.
this joy, this feeling of love inside mm-hmm. of her. Mm-hmm. And you know what's kind of funny? People ask me, is that easy? I just have to change my mind
yes.
and focus on something new? What do you answer on, Paula?
Well, you know, I actually do that very thing and encourage my clients to do it. You know, everybody's always saying, I want to be happy. I just want to be happy. And I tell them joy is a choice. And so I did a little experiment and I've continued it because it works so well. Every morning when I finish my meditation, I'll just say, today I choose joy. And the same kind of thing would happen to me. I'd go in the dry cleaners, and before I knew it, you know, everybody in there is laughing, and we're just having this great time, and I leave, and I'm realizing, wow, that was joyful, you know? And whenever I do that, and my clients tell me the same thing, if they consciously say that, and throughout your day, I choose joy. Today, I choose joy. You know, I encourage our listeners, try that. See what happens, and let us know, it'll be fun to see if we can get a roll going out there in the world of just everybody choosing joy.
I love that. You know, I want to mention to our listeners, I wrote a book a while back called Release, Renew, Evolve. And it's Make Peace with Your Past and Get On with Living is the subtitle. The reason I wrote that book is I told a lot of clients, or I asked a lot of clients, hey, you know, go try to feel joy. Go try to feel peace. Go. And what would happen is a lot of past memories and places they were ashamed or blamed or criticized, or their fears or their harms or their hurts would come up. And I thought, you know, what if we were able to inventory those thoughts and make a conscious choice to release them? And so I started experimenting with clients with that. And what happened over a 20-year period is people told me it was like doing this exercise in this book was like taking off a dark pair of sunglasses. They didn't realize that their thinking, those beliefs that were floating around, that they were holding inside of their body and their mind, right? They were attaching to them, were actually changing how they perceived life. So I want to just let the listeners know about it, Release, Renew, Evolve. They can get it on my website at kendfoster.com for people that are having a little challenge with really getting rid of some of those old harms or hurts or resentments that, you know, they're just stuck, right?
It's huge. That is huge. You know, I work a lot with subconscious mind stuff too. And in my book, there are many different kinds of processes because that's a huge thing in grief. People get stuck. Either they tend to either vilify or deify the person, the place, the situation that they've lost. And when they take it to those extremes and they're locked into that kind of thinking, it's very hard to heal from that.
Yeah.
And we're, again, we're talking about the subconscious, we're talking about the brain, and there's a lot of that coming up in our next segment with our expert guest today, Dr. David Krueger.
We'll be right back.
All right.
Is living in today's fast-paced world making you feel stressed and out of balance? Are anxiety, sleeplessness, depression, lack of focus, or weight gain robbing you of your relationship and your energy? If you're ready for change, you need to call Paula Shaw at Rebalancing You. Paula helps you identify and eliminate self-sabotaging thinking and behavior. Using a wide variety of mind-body techniques, she provides her clients with the most effective processes for their specific needs. To book a rebalancing session with Paula, call 858-480-9234. That's 858-480-9234.
And welcome back to Transition Radio. We're so excited that in this segment, we have Dr. David Krueger joining us. He's an executive mentor coach. He's the CEO of Mentor Path. He's an author. He's written a book called The Secret Language of Money. And he is going to teach us today about neuroscience, using neuroscience in marketing. I am so excited, Ken, about what we're going to learn today, because what's going on with the brain and the research that's coming out of learning so much about how the brain functions and what the brain guides us to do is fascinating. And in our last segment, we were talking quite a lot about the brain. So this is so perfect that we can jump into the brain now with Dr. Krueger.
Yeah, Dave, I'm really happy to have you on the show. And my friend and mentor, Chris Van Buren, has mentioned a lot about you with his company, Launch Moxie. So welcome. Dave, how did you get into this neuroscience of marketing? I'm fascinated by this.
Well, thank you, Ken. It's a privilege to be here. I work with practicing professionals and executives in healthcare, law, finance, accounting, and coaching. And even though they may be well-educated and trained, they often have challenges selling their professional services. And I began to be interested in how others have challenges selling products. Because when people are expert at helping others achieve their goals, they may still be learning how to translate that into doing the same for their own products or services. You know, for example, the belief that someone considers all available information and then logically selects the correct option is soundly and repeatedly disproven. Likewise, to provide someone with all available information with the rationale as to why it would be a good choice is equally a formula for failure. In fact, so many of the ways we try to facilitate change, as well as the ways we try to influence and persuade through information and logic, are contrary to how the mind and brain work.
So,
for example, strategies that simply inform people about making a change by providing information, we know how much that doesn't work. If information would change behavior, we'd all be thin, we'd work out every day, we'd eat mostly vegetables, and we'd have significant money saved. And there would be a bunch of librarians that would be billionaires.
And that's not how it is?
That's not the way our minds and brains work. So there's been some innovative work, especially in the last very few years, in the mind and brain sciences that help us understand and apply the psychology of influence, the neuroscience of persuasion, mindset mastery, and neuromarketing to enhance success. So that's what I've put together and worked on and that we're talking about today specifically.
Well, those are all really big terms, you know, neuromarketing, neuroscience. For some of our listeners, they're wondering, what is this? What are we talking about?
What I'm wondering is what you're saying that it is true, we buy with our hearts and then rationalize it with our heads?
Yes. Okay, so let me take those kind of in order. Neuromarketing simply is a study of the way we actually make decisions, how the brain responds to various stimuli so that we can understand decision patterns. For example, to understand the customer's unconscious mind and choice architecture is important because neuroscience has shown that 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. So our thoughts, emotions, even our learning mostly occurs outside our conscious awareness. So to be effective in anything from breaking habits to learning new tasks to marketing, it becomes immensely beneficial to study how our brains work. And an example of your question, Paula, is that neuroeconomists have shown us that we make purchase decisions up to 10 seconds before we're even consciously aware of the decisions we've made.
Wow.
And that decision is made instantly in the midbrain, and then it's booted up to the forebrain to make it make sense and to be conscious and logical. So that just emphasizes how much we process at an unconscious level. There have been some studies recently that have shown that people know the answers to puzzles seconds before they're consciously aware of knowing those. So this is simply a way to study how people actually make decisions so that rather than being derailed or making incorrect conclusions, we can help them make decisions that really fit their needs and their challenges.
So if they're not buying or making decisions on a logical level, what level are they making those decisions on?
Well, we make decisions based on the associations that we have in our brain. We see a stimulus and we immediately associate it to something, and then that often determines whether we proceed or not. So we're doing this at a subliminal level and then becoming aware of how this may make sense in our lives or not. So this is about getting an awareness and an alignment through and through.
So if somebody has a stimulus, is what I heard, outside of themselves, they see that stimulates the brain to have certain thoughts, is what I'm hearing. What if somebody's running with an internal dialogue of, let's say they're running on certain values that I only buy things that I need instead of I buy things that I want, right? How does that impact them?
Well, it's helpful to know what a consumer's or a purchaser's needs and ideals are, so that we can offer and align what we do or what we have with that, because people purchase according to their identity. In other words, if you were to line up a whole number of choices and hook up someone's brain to look at each of these choices in sequence, the one that lights up the area of the brain that has to do with a sense of self, with identity, and there's a specific region in the left forebrain that has to do with this, whenever that sense of identity lights up on that product, that's the one they're going to purchase. So that's what we need to know in terms of what is going to be an alignment of their needs, their ideals, their values, so that we can create products or align products for selection that will fit their needs and be in their best interest as well.
So let me ask you a question, Dave. I'm Campbell's Soup. Let's just say I'm Campbell's Soup. How do I plan a marketing strategy that's going to appeal to people's brains?
Well, let's think about it in terms of a story.
Okay.
So storytelling is a way to create both an understanding, and stories are the way we make sense of things, the way we understand, and the way we remember things.
Mm-hmm.
So consider these questions. Stay with me for a minute because I want to develop the premise here.
Okay.
Consider these questions. What initially draws us into a story that we want to read or hear? What sustains our engagement as a listener or reader? And what do we unconsciously respond to when we hear or read a story that captures our attention? Now, there's one answer to all these questions that comes from neuroscience, based on how our brains are wired to perceive and process stories. A story's secret is this. From the first sentence, we must want to know what happens next.
Mm.
When we want to know what happens next, the brain's pleasure center of dopamine fires, the pleasure chemical, and signals that intriguing information is unfolding. We pay attention, and we keep going. Now, a story's hardwired into our brains. It's how we make sense of an overwhelming world. When a story meets these hardwired expectations, it engages and becomes successful. And this is the element of a successful story, whether it's a best-selling novel, whether it's a film, whether it's telling someone what you do professionally and seeing if they're interested.
So what happens next when you're thinking that with the Campbell's Soup story, it's like, well, what happens next for me is I get to taste this great, wonderful tasting soup and I'm going to feel empowered by it.
Right? Exactly.
Okay.
So here's how that can translate. We're wired for story and connection. We can go 40 days without food, 3 days without water, but about 35 seconds without finding a meaning in something. We're always looking for meaning. We're looking for the why beneath what's happening on the surface. Our curiosity engages our brain's focus.
Mm.
The anticipation of what's next prompts that pleasurable rush of dopamine. And when curiosity is aroused, there's an emotional interest in finding out what happens next. So this is the true story of Campbell's Soup, and this is the difference between a best-selling novel and a non-selling book, is whether this principle of story is engaged to want to know what happens next.
I am just fascinated by what you're saying here, Dave. It just makes so much sense. Even from the time we're very small, this is what draws us in to wanting to communicate with others, right? What's going to happen next? That's so interesting. And
let me interrupt you and add something right there, because you mentioned something I think really important, that what we know now, and most of this that we're talking about is in the last very few years, much of it in the last year or two. Neuroscientists know now that the first few words of a conversation boots up a particular mindset in the listener or reader to then process the entire remainder of the exchange.
Wow.
A conversation, for example, that begins with a perceived authoritative or critical or adversarial comment activates the brain circuitry of fight and flight. So the question is about trust, about protection, and the listener may close down or just simply get defensive. Now, on the other hand, a conversation that begins in a collaborative mode activates the brain's neurochemical system of bonding and connection and frames listening and interacting in a different way for the remainder of the conversation.
Wow.
The chemical of bonding, oxytocin, mediates the rest of that conversation.
That's amazing, so, Dave. Listen, we're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back with Dr. David Kruger, and we're going to be talking a little bit more, actually a lot more, about neuroscience, neuromarketing, and how it impacts you and your life. We'll be right back.
There's a question many of us ask ourselves when we are grieving. When will this pain ever end? Life transition coach and grief recovery specialist Paula Shaw wants you to know there is light at the end of the tunnel. In her new best-selling book, Paula gives you information and practical exercises you can use right away in your recovery process, including breathing methods, the emotional freedom technique, energy psychology work, and many other healing tools. Grief, when will this pain ever end? Available now on Amazon.com.
Welcome back to Transition Radio, and our guest today is Dr. David Kruger. David, you were just talking about some examples of how neurowisdom, neuromarketing works. Can you give us some stories or examples about how this impacts everyday people?
Yeah, we were just talking about how the beginning of a conversation boots up a particular mindset and the expectation and processing of the remainder of that conversation. One example is the anchoring effect. Words that connote achievement, such as succeed, master, and win, increase performance on assigned tasks and doubles the participant's willingness to persist at the task.
Wow.
Another example of how what we present first changes the way someone experiences what's presented next. Researchers found, and this is just one of many examples like this, researchers found that the amount of money people said they'd be willing to spend on dinner went up when the restaurant was named Studio 97 as opposed to Studio 17.
Wow.
People said they would pay for a box of Belgian chocolates was greater after they were asked to write down a pair of high digits from their Social Security number versus a pair of low digits from their Social Security numbers. So, in other words, the brain seeks patterns, and by understanding the patterns, we can structure favorable responses.
Dr. Kruger, I work with couples, and I'm just thinking, you know, women are always talking about how to talk to their husbands about something, and I know men get in a state of angst, too, about how to talk to women. So what you've just taught us, are you saying that the opening words we use in a conversation are going to set the tone for how the whole rest of it goes?
Yes.
So we don't necessarily want to say, honey, we have to have a feelings talk, because that's probably not going to go well for most men, right?
Right. Let me give you a really simple example.
Okay.
Of that, because we're talking about the difference between a collaborative conversation and a conversation that begins with facts or information or simply an expert problem solving. Let's say someone goes to an expert and they're motivated because they're in pain to see a physician. They're scared.
Mm-hmm.
They schlep across town, park, wait, expose themselves to whatever in the physician's office. And the expert gives them a prescription as a part of the recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've seen the expert, but they haven't engaged to make it their story, but for that prescription, slightly less than 50% actually fill that prescription. Of those who fill it, slightly less than 50% actually take it as directed. So
wow.
Somebody consults an expert and are told exactly what to do, less than 1 in 4 actually follow through. There's not a collaboration. So the difference between what you just said and a different point of view is a collaboration. So in the couple's work, it may be best to do a collaborative effort. And another illustration of another point we were talking about earlier is to understand how someone's brain is wired. For example, the couple has issues about money.
Mm-hmm.
If one partner's brain is wired that money equals freedom, and the other partner's brain is wired that money means security, they're going to have to find a way to create common ground, because freedom means being able to spend and enjoy and have a great time. Security means accumulating. So first, the challenge is to understand that they have different wiring, different ideals, and then to create a common ground together to negotiate something that's acceptable to both of them.
And you can do that through conscious mind? You can do that through talking it out and trying to find
that? Or how about questions? Absolutely. Can we tune that in with a question to somehow collaborative questions
to engage
to
the
engage?
Brain?
Mm-hmm. Is there have you experienced that, or have you done work around that?
Well, let's look at how a story is constructed. That I think would give us an answer, because the first thing we want to do is to get inside the experience of the person. And the first thing we do to get inside, let's do it a different way. Draw a circle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Inside that circle, put a stick figure. Now, that person inside the circle is your customer, your client, or your collaborator. The first thing you have to do in order to be listened to or heard is to enter that circle. Now, the best way to do that is to resonate with the experience of the person, to understand their challenge, their issue. That's the first part of a story. The middle part of a story is the development, the working through and creating solutions and ideas and ways of proceeding in a collaborative way. And the final part of the story is the resolution, what you do that's different. So that's what you do with a customer, with a client. It's what I do with the clients I do mentor coaching with, is to resonate with their experience and understand their challenge from their perspective. And then together we collaborate from their experience to find solutions and create success stories.
So let me repeat that back from a coaching point of view.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing you say is that we would, let's say a person had a issue with growing their marketing, okay? So we understand, we come in with compassion, for lack of another word, compassion, understanding, some wisdom about, oh yeah, I relate to you, I've been there, I see how you're having a challenge with this. Let's collaborate, let's synergize together some ideas on how this might change, and then come up with specific ideas or strategies that would be unique to that individual person.
Yes, and let me develop that a little bit, because I can give you a real life example of how that worked and the metrics on that. This 4-book series, the e-books that are text and audio and video, I first did a number of teleseminars on these subjects to really get feedback and to develop the ideas and to make the research and the work very efficient and user-friendly. So what I did for the final one, before I moved it to ebooks, is to listen to what I was teaching, because I hadn't been applying it. When I applied the principles, it increased my subscription eightfold. So here's an example of that. From the landing page, I have a series of 6 questions of consider these questions, and then a series of 6 benefits that someone will receive. And the first question and the first bullet of benefit match. For example, do you have significant expertise and credentials but not enough clients? So in this ebook series, you will learn how to systematically shape the primary reason people buy professional services and products. The second, do you have difficulty converting people who need your services to paying clients? The second, the 4 primary tools of significant influence. Do you have a system to consistently bring in more clients to your professional practice? That bullet, the 6 psychological principles of successful persuasion.
Mm.
So, If you'd like me to go on, but that's just an example of an application. When I did it in that way, it worked.
So the brain found a pattern that it liked.
Exactly.
Oh, love that.
That's amazing.
And it fits the pattern of story, of challenge, development, and resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way we're wired.
Mm-hmm.
And we were really talking about how the brain is wired with certain patterns in the couple that we talked about, because behavior patterns, attachment patterns are all wired, and people will play them out until they look at and recognize that they're doing that and have alternate possibilities. So the first key is recognizing a story and then to own it and then to assess what works and what doesn't. And for mentor coaching, the very simple principle is, if it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else.
This is so great, Dave. Let's give our listeners your information, because I'm sure there are a lot of people like me that want to know more and know how they can get your stuff.
Well, let me just mention that Dr. Kruger is giving away a book today. It's called Our Money Stories, The Neuroscience of Good and Bad Decisions. And as a coach's coach, Dr. David Kruger teaches the neuroscience of money and success, and you can learn some of his wisdom with this mini ebook that explains how we think about money and what to do about it. So it's absolutely free. All you have to do is go to launchmoxie.com/story, and I'll spell that out. So you got a pen and paper. It's launch, L-A-U-N-C-H, then Moxie, moxie.com/story. Launchmoxie.com/story. So, David, thank you for giving that to our audience. I know that's going to create a lot of value.
And let's also remind our listeners that if you're driving and weren't able to write that down, this show will be podcasted and available on the KCBQ's website tomorrow on paulashaw.com, on Transition Radio Facebook, and several other places. Ken will have it on his Facebook as well. So there are many places you'll be able to listen to the podcast, because I know all of us want to be making notes as Dr. Kruger is talking, because he is sharing some real pearls that are fabulous pieces of wisdom today.
Right.
And what do we have coming up next, Ken?
So in our next session, we are going to talk about some of the habits, and we're going to be talking about success habits and how that ties into neuromarketing.
Mm.
So we'll be right back.
Is living in today's fast-paced world making you feel stressed and out of balance? Are anxiety, sleeplessness, depression, lack of focus, or weight gain robbing you of your relationship and your energy? If you're ready for change, you need to call Paula Shaw at Rebalancing You. Paula helps you identify and eliminate self-sabotaging thinking and behavior. Using a wide variety of mind-body techniques, she provides her clients with the most effective processes for their specific needs. To book a rebalancing session with Paula, call 858-480-9234. That's 858-480-9234.
Welcome back to Transition Radio. It's Transition Tuesday, and we are so happy to be here with you. And with us this evening is Dr. David Kruger. He is fascinating us with the things he's teaching today about neuroscience and marketing, and how important it is in all areas of life to be able to come into the circle of the person you're trying to communicate with, to understand things from their perspective and meet them on that ground so that the communication really has meaning. Did I say that correctly, Dave?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, good, because I love that piece.
It would have taken me a lot longer to say that.
I'm going to use that in every area of my life, and particularly with my clients. I think that is such beautiful insight. So we were going to talk a little bit in this segment about success habits. You know, what are, and can we tie success habits in with the brain? I have a feeling we can. How do we make something like for example, if you want to lose weight and you've decided you should go running every morning, how do you make yourself want to get out of bed and do that?
Okay, I want to begin, and I think we definitely can. I want to begin with a quiz.
Okay.
To set this up. This is an actual study. It was done on several thousand professionals by the Wharton School of Business to determine what was the major factor about whether someone engaged or declined services from the professional. And it was the same reason for engaging and the same reason for declining. So which do you think was most important? Years of experience, reputation, amount of fee, degrees and certifications, or state of the economy?
Amount of fee.
Okay, as you think about that, it's a trick question. It's none of the above.
Oh, you got me.
Well, I'm glad I didn't answer.
I thought you were going to say it's all of the above.
Oh, no. It's stating the recommendations and the fee clearly and confidently. And I want to elaborate about both of those because clarity and confidence are two major success factors. Confidence is a state of mind. We know from numerous neuroscience studies that emotion and states of mind are contagious and energy field transfer from one person to another. Einstein talked about this as the unified field theory. And confident is a state of mind. People naturally associate confidence with expertise, the induction of a shared experience, a mutual influence of energy fields plays a role in our affinity for confident people. And think about any consultation you've had with a professional. Whatever words were used, you had a sense of whether you were confident that that person was going to help you or not. And that became important. Now, this is another principle. It's not what someone will say in response to your communication, if you're selling a service or product. It's what they will say to themselves as a result of your communication with them. Cognitive studies have shown that the message itself is not directly responsible for change. The direct result of change is due to another factor, self-talk. Think about the things that you've experienced that are really memorable. It's not exactly what somebody said to you, but what you said to yourself is a result of that that you take away and that you remember next time when you reflect on that experience.
I see.
So it's the inner story we're talking about.
Exactly.
And the inner story is what's building the confidence, is what I'm hearing you say.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, another thing that we know, and this is to Paula's comment, a buddy of mine who does some research on this at Loyola Marymount, Mark Waldman, has done some research on the 10-10 rule. What we know in neuroscience is that brain retains a cluster of about 10 to 12 words at a time. After that, we begin to tail off, and we lose focus, or we begin to plan what we're going to have for dinner that night. So what he's done in some really interesting research is to show, especially in emotionally charged situations like divorce, mediation, a number of legal situations, when both sides agree to this protocol, they will speak only 10 words. And he has them put both fists up and put one finger or thumb up for each word, and then they stop, and then the other person responds. When they do this, they reach a resolution significantly more satisfying and in 20 to 30% of the time that they normally would have taken. So this is what, when I train my New Life Story wellness coaches and New Money Story mentor coaches, this is one aspect of what we do, is to look at how to, in a clear, simple, specific way, ask a question or make a comment and let the client respond. You know, the four basic rules of good writing and good speaking are the same: clarity, brevity, simplicity, humanity, because that's the way our brains work.
And so are you saying it's because of the clarity and the brevity that, like in the case of the couple talking, the resolution comes more quickly and a better resolution because they're just able to retain what's being said more easily?
Exactly.
Wow. Exactly. Oh, that is so good. I'm going to use that today.
And the key is it becomes their story.
Yeah.
And that's what didn't happen when the physician prescribes a medication. That was his story or her story.
Mm.
What really makes the difference is when it becomes the client's story. When it becomes the client's story of wellness or the patient's story of wellness, it has to become your story with a point of reference inside yourself for it to really be powerful.
So is that why asking questions is such a powerful thing? Because then the answers come from the client?
Exactly. And think about what else questions do. Questions focus the attention and the energy field of the brain. Think about how we began doing that with, say, an infant that's all over the place, crying, upset, can't be consoled. What do? We jangle some keys. That instantly focuses attention and changes a state of mind.
Right.
Somebody's talking as an adult and into their third paragraph and rolling along, maybe not exactly reflecting on what they say, and we interrupt and ask a question, it focuses them specifically on what we feel might be helpful. That's why I have an agreement with every person I work with that I can interrupt them at any time, more for effectiveness and efficiency, and they can interrupt me. But the only person who I've never had that agreement or who's exceeded that is my wife.
Your wife.
But it works great with clients.
That's funny. Well, so let me put out a couple questions along this that might be pertinent. So one question might be, why am I so confident? Or another question might be, why is my confidence building every day? Would that help somebody to start to build that confidence within them?
I think it would, because it reflects on possibility and on what's worked. And the principle here is confident is a state of mind. And that state of mind determines how we perceive and process information. You know, think about you and your partner have just had a nice dinner. You're having a glass of wine. You hear some noise in the backyard. And you probably don't even notice it. If you do, you sort of dismiss it. Next night, you're home alone. You've just watched the last episode of Criminal Minds. Same noise in the backyard. And you're alert, and you have to check it out. State of mind determines the meaning that we attach to something, and the meaning determines the behavior.
Hmm.
So regulating a state of mind becomes essential in doing this. In fact, I have a free webinar that's about 30 or 35 minutes long on the homepage of my website, MentorPath, MentorPath.com, on master states of mind. And it's available to the listeners if they're interested.
Oh, that's wonderful. MentorPath.com, you said,
yeah,
Dave?
Exactly.
Okay. And it's a free webinar?
It's free webinar. It's in the middle of the homepage. It's the first thing you'll see alongside a picture of the brain.
Fabulous. Fabulous. And let's give the information again, Ken, for that other free offer for our listeners.
Yeah, Dave's free offer is a ebook. It's called Our Money Stories, The Neuroscience of Good and Bad Decisions. And I think all of us would benefit by making better decisions. Dave is a coach's coach, Dr. David Krueger. He teaches the neuroscience of money and success, and you can learn some of his wisdom in this mini ebook that explains how we think about money and what to do with it. You can get that at launchmoxie.com/story. Again, it's LAUNCH, launch, Moxie, MOXIE.com/story.
Dave, I want to thank you with all my heart for all of the insight and wisdom and fabulous information you've shared with us today. I think we definitely have to have you back, because
I was just going to say that I'd love to have David back.
We didn't begin to scratch the surface here. There's so much that was so good.
Thank you both. It was a privilege to be here, and you asked great questions, and it was a very fun exchange. I hope it was beneficial for our listeners.
Yeah, I think it was incredibly beneficial, incredibly beneficial.
So coming up next week, we have Michelle Humphrey, who is the leading authority on business growth. And we also have Lisa
Sasevich.
No, it's
Lisa Artsberger.
Sasevich is in July.
Lisa
though.
Artsberger,
yeah.
Who's going to talk to us about money and women.
Wow, money, wisdom, and business growth. How exciting is that? That's going to be great.
It's going to be great. And again, thank you to Dr. David Krueger, who just really opened our eyes today about the neuroscience of marketing, the neuroscience really of communicating. So thank you. Thank you to our listeners for being with us. It was a joy, Ken, being with you once again.
It's great being with you, Paula. And until next week, keep changing. Keep allowing yourself to open your mind, your heart, and to more wisdom, more love, and more connection.
Yes. We look forward to being with all of you again next week on Transition Radio. Good evening.